This poem is called El Paso Out Back. In the coyote distance before me, beyond the mesquite and the creosote bush, way out there on the edge of my hearing, where the solitude of this world of practiced certainty collides with the ceaseless rush of the freeway, the constant drone of semi sets an iron boundary. Overhead, the wispy ripple of a jet's contrail seems strangely out of place. In the foreground, the two of them play at agates in the fading sunlight, choosing shooters, scratching concentric circles into the vagrant dust. Like schoolboys with boundless futures, they bowl their crystal spheres across rabbit tracks and beetle trails, etching their identities into this land's long memory of wagon trains and mountain lions paths and dinosaurs and sea beasts. As if this ritual contest between these two savages could alter the course of history somehow. As if the outcome of this game could derail the cosmos if it doesn't come out right. The sun pauses for a moment to give life a chance to catch its breath, to measure its reserves against the coming of another day, then cascades over the mountaintop like molten lava, sucking the hot darkness behind it like a shroud. These two broken-hearted dreamers chase errant marbles into the gathering shadows, while into the silence of a desert sundown, night creatures move cautiously out upon the sands. And we, much older and wiser than schoolboys now, scavenge for wood like Neanderthals to set a fire to warm our backs against the sudden chill of evening.
That poem is in a new book by Burns Taylor. The book is called Hands Like Eyes. Burns is blind, but he has amazing vision. How do you see everything in that poem? How do you know that it's a wispy ripple of a jet's contrail?
Well, because I hear it, you know, when a jet is way up high, it sounds just like a...
So you're interpreting...
Like up to 35,000 feet or so, it's just a ripple. You don't hear the engine or anything. So.
And the mountaintop, like molten lava. Yeah. Imagery you use in here is stunning. Give us a story. Where were you born? Where'd you come from? What's going on?
Well, I've been born in Texas. I'm a Texan, born and bred in Houston. Went to school in Austin, to UT, University of Austin, and came out here. In 65, went on out west to L.A. and came back here.
What was your field of study?
English.
Okay.
And then creative writing. I got a Master of Fine Arts in professional writing at USC.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a tremendous program, great experience. And I've been blind since I was 3 years old. So, I don't know how. Poems kind of seep into my consciousness, I think, like a... Sort of like when you wake up in the morning, you say, okay, I had a dream. Now, what was it? There was a guy. It's like a half-remembered dream. You're trying to recall a dream. And you just try to get it right.
Well, this latest book, Hands Like Eyes, and I love the title, by the way. Well, you've generated an event at the Downtown Library, the auditorium, which will be next Saturday, that's May the 3rd, from 2 to 4 p.m.
Right.
Tell us what you've got planned for us.
Well, we've got a program of poetry. I'm going to read selections from the book. I have a quartet of jazz friends of mine who play jazz around town. They're all professionals. I'm really excited about that. They're going to play, and then I'll read. And we'll go back and forth and then finish up with some, also Gene Keller. My old friend from way back will be there to introduce me, and he's going to do a song of his that I requested. And then we'll have snacks and drinks and chill.
And hang out.
And chill.
Yeah, sounds like a good basic poetry event.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly.
Now, in your body of work, where does Hands Like Eyes come
in? It's the title poem.
But is it...
It's from an experience of being at the Texas School for the Blind in Austin, where... Mm-hmm. I attended school there from the first grade through the 10th grade, and then I transferred to public school, and it was an amazing experience. The hands thing was like, well, when you get all these blind people together, guys could walk up and feel of somebody, and we used to do it, we'd just be quiet, okay, and they'd be feeling of your arms, and I'd say, okay, John, but, you know, they could tell by the contour of your body and your hair and all that who you were. They could identify you whether you'd say anything or not. They could just feel of you and tell who you were.
As amazing. And you can do the same, I suspect.
I guess I could then, but I don't do a whole lot of going around feeling of people too much.
Well, it's frowned upon unless you tend to be in a blind community, I guess, where
yeah.
it's like hands are that's eyes.
So, you know. Yeah,
but that was a fascinating poem, and I did get a lot of perspective. But I continue to be stunned by the acuity of your vision throughout these poems. What would you say are your major themes?
Love lost, death. And then I have a section of fantasy poems that are pieces, I guess you'd say.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, this book covers about 50 years of my writing career, starting from late 60s, early 70s. I was in the creative writing program here at UTEP and mm-hmm. did quite a bit of stuff. And I guess that was my first publication, actually. It was in the little campus magazine. But I write a lot about, I guess, philosophical poems about, I've got one in there called Ascension that is about the past, about how things change. Actually, it started at the state office building. I used to own a bar downtown at the same spot where the state office building is now.
Mm-hmm.
They knocked down the block completely where my bar was, made a huge parking lot, and then eventually they put the state office building in the middle of that parking lot. One day I was standing out there, I was working in the state building, and I had all these feelings like, my God, I've been here before. My bar was right over there, and now it's a parking lot. And where did it all go? Where did the music and the dancing and the energy of all of those years that we had that bar there, where did all of that go? And so that generated really that poem called Ascension. It's like, and I came up, the poem ends with the idea that life is like a building with a one-way elevator going up, and each floor is a chapter of our lives sealed by history forever. We're born in the basement among strangers, and we die on the roof alone like birds.
Oh, I remember that.
The way that one.
That's yeah. just, you capture so the fleeting instances, the little seemingly indescribable angst, and yet you've managed to capture it repeatedly
so that
in
feeling
your work.
Of the vanished place and time is what generated that poem.
Do you think you would be as insightful a writer if you were not blind?
Oh, God, I have no idea. I really don't.
Have you considered how being blind has affected your ability to use the language?
To write?
Yeah.
Yeah. It, of course, I use all my other senses.
Mm-hmm.
And
very well.
And sometimes I sense things that other people don't see.
Because yes, that's clear in your
I'm
work,
used
yes.
to that. I turn on my senses and I... Mm-hmm. I like to say I listen behind the words of what people are saying. I hear behind the words. I hear intention. I hear anger. I hear emotion behind what they're saying. I learned to read people's words, their language.
Well, you're more than the mild-mannered, award-winning poet, essayist, inspirational speaker, college instructor, businessman, public servant, and former bar owner.
I did all of that.
Yeah, you must be tired. You have also were featured in Beyond Blindness, this one-hour documentary narrated
Patty
by
Duke.
Patty Duke.
Yeah.
And you've been written about by
that
numerous people. What
yeah.
makes you such a special blind person?
Oh, now you're asking the wrong person.
I think I'm going to the source.
I've always been very assertive from a small child. I've had a lot of firsts. You know, I was the first blind instructor here at UTEP, 1967.
I didn't know that.
I was the first kid to ride a bicycle using what's now called echolocation, which they didn't have a word for that then.
How cool is that?
It was great.
Where did you ride your bicycle?
I rode it around. My mother had a laundry next to the house. I was able to ride. It was like a rectangular building. I could driveways all around it. And I just go, And every once in a while, there'd be a car in the way, and I'd say, oh, you know, and I'd use echolocation, which is just making clicks.
You could have been that guy on the show I just saw on TV recently.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Well, it's pretty much a popular subject these days. But
as far
as I know, I'm the first documented person using echolocation to ride a bicycle. A guy did his master's thesis on me when I was like 10 years old, 11. We had a long sidewalk about 100 feet long, and he would set up targets on his sidewalk. And I'd ride my little bike down the sidewalk, and my objective was to avoid hitting the targets. Out of 100 runs, I had 4 collisions.
Wow.
And I never knew where they'd be. He'd put them right together. I'd have to go around them. I'd have to click to see if there's enough space to go between there.
Oh, this is fascinating.
Or there'd be one in front of me, and then further down, there'd be the other on the other side. And I was a busy boy trying to avoid
targets. We've got to add
targets.
Burns Taylor, mild-mannered superhero, and author of Hands Like Eyes, will be at the Downtown Library Auditorium. That's next Saturday, May the 3rd, from 2 to 4 p.m. Catch poetry, jazz, some good snacks, and I suspect it's really going to be a great time because you're a fascinating man. I want to thank Burns for being with us here today. You can check him out online. Go to burnstaylor.com, and you can also buy his new book, Hands Like Eyes, through Amazon or Kindle. And this is going to be a great event. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you, Monica, very much for your time.